Job chapter 24, poor Job continues, doesn't he, verse 12, complaining that he cries out and God doesn't hear him. He talks about how men groan, the soul of the wounded cries out, yet God doesn't regard the folly. So he continues that he's crying out and not being heard. He said this in Job 19, he's going to say it again in Job 30, that he's crying out for justice and he's not being heard. And this, of course, is the struggle that we all have, that I cry out and I'm not heard. I want to give just one perspective on this. And it's in that God does reply to this. In his reply in Job 38, God talks about the natural creation. And he directs Job to the natural creation. He says that the young ravens cry out to God for food, and yet they are not always heard. That's Job 38, verse 41. And it's the same Hebrew word used for crying out as you've got here in Job 24, verse 12. The soul of the wounded cries out, yet God doesn't regard the folly. And so God's answer to this, and he does make an answer, is in Job 38, 41, when he says, look at the natural creation. The young ravens cry out to God for food, and yet it seems to them that they are not heard. But the wider picture in Job 38 is that God sustains all of creation by grace. So he's saying that, look, I created all things and I sustain all things in creation, although there are some points at which some things, like the young ravens, cry out to me for food and apparently, in times of famine, are not heard. So, he has a sort of a works-based approach, because in Job 29, verse 12, he's going to say that when the needy cried out to me earlier in my life, I heard them, I responded. But now he says, I cry out to you, O God, and you don't hear me. Now, God is not that primitive. You helped people who cried out to you, so therefore you expect that God is going to just immediately respond to you when you cry out to him. I mean, on a sort of human level, is fair enough, I suppose. But God is not quite so primitive. His apparent silence is because his response is not predicated upon human works or human good works. You did some good works, so God's going to be good to you. No, this is not how it goes, because actually all our righteousness is as filthy rags compared to the problem of our basic sinfulness and our rebellion against God. And the fact that that is peppered, as it were, with some good works does not therefore mean that God is duty bound to come through for you the minute you cry out to him. And this, as I say, is God's answer in Job 38 when he uses the same word and says, look, I sustain the whole of creation by my grace, and yet within that creation that I sustain, yep, there are points at which, let's say, the young ravens cry out to me for food in time of famine, and I apparently don't hear them. But in the wider picture, I do preserve them. So, this is God's perspective. You may cry out to me in prayer, especially thinking that because people cried out to you and you heard, therefore I am duty bound to respond to you. Well, God is not an ATM. He's not a cash machine. It's not that you type in the magic number and out sprouts banknotes or whatever. God is not like that. God is not so primitive. And it's not on the basis of works anyway. The idea is, however, that in the larger and wider picture, in the larger narrative, God's grace will sustain you, does sustain you, and will ultimately save you. And that is the lesson that Job finally comes to learn. So, as with so many of our struggles about the apparent silence of God, the apparent distance of God, this is all because we do not see the wider narrative. You may say, yeah, well, all right, fair enough, but I can't see it. No, you can't. And here is where trust comes in, and faith, to believe, in Hebrew and Greek, means that, to trust. This is where childlike trust comes in, that he has this far wider agenda. It's rather like with Joseph, when his brothers come to him and he answers them roughly and starts putting them through these hoops about, your spies and that sort of thing. And yet he has to turn away from them, go into the bedroom and cry, because his heart burns for them, he bursts for them, and he's fighting back the tears behind that apparent mask of apparent indifference. And God is not indifferent, but there is a wider narrative out there, and he asks us to trust in him for that. But that is there, even though we do not see its entire extent. And this is where I think that any ultimate anger with God over his apparent silence or his apparent injustice, his apparent not hearing our cries or the cries of others, is really a lack of faith, and it is a lack of trust. But there is this wider narrative there. And that narrative is fundamentally about love, grace, and salvation. And so this is the answer, finally, and this is why if we have the faith and trust in that, then finally all things shall be revealed when the Lord comes. Just as it was really with Job, he did hold on to the end, and then God gives him the answer. Look at the ravens. They cry to me, and I apparently don't hear them, but I sustain them by my grace. And this is the reason, I think, why there is this problem of evil, this problem of God's apparent silence and apparent lack of response to the crying out of the needy, etc. It is to test us. It's to test our humility. It is to test our faith. And I suspect that in the end, if we fail those tests and turn around and shake our fist at God and get angry and march off into atheism or whatever, we have failed the test of humility and of faith.